Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Southern Fried Podcast, a production of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I'm Rex Nelson, senior editor of the Democrat Gazette, and we're going to be talking public education on the next couple of shows, and I can't think of anybody better to talk about public education in Arkansas than Dr. Glenn Finner. He is the superintendent of the Marion School District, former president of Mid-South Community College. I could go on and on. This guy has been an educator all his life, really a legend in Arkansas education, and my friend of many years. So, Glenn, thank you. Appreciate you making the drive to Little Rock and being with us today.
Well, we appreciate the opportunity. As I told you earlier, it's always an honor to be in the presence of greatness.
Well, and I don't know who that might be. It's not me. But
this the highlight of this day has already occurred.
Well, thank you, and I'm really looking forward because there's so many education issues that we are following in the state. You and I had done, not too long ago, another podcast, and I thought, well, I've got to get you on my own here. But one of the things I talked about there is what I call school people. And my father was a first job out of college in 1948, was as a high school football coach at Newport. He later went into the sporting goods business, which
the old,
he was in.
The old Greyhounds.
Yeah, yeah. When I grew up, he was in the sporting goods business. But he sold athletic supplies to virtually every high school in Arkansas, and plus colleges and universities. So everybody I grew up with, or what we referred to as school people, they were superintendents. They were coaches, they were teachers, they were principals, other administrators. I mean, and they were good people, and you're a school person, your father was a school person, you come from a family of school people, and somewhere along the line, and you can give me your thoughts on this because you've been involved your entire career in Arkansas education, somewhere along the line, as we crafted policy, we stopped listening to our school people, didn't we? Seems to me.
I don't think there's any question. If you go back to those days in the 60s and 70s, you would see a handful of superintendents walking the halls of the Capitol.
Every legislative session, yep.
With great connections to very influential legislators for the reason simply that those legislators knew that if they had a question about the wisdom or lack thereof of some of the decisions they were contemplating, there was no one better to answer those questions than those folks who were practitioners who were doing it every day
on the front lines, yep.
And who had the pulse of their communities. That was also a time when educators were well respected in our communities. If you were a second grade teacher, you could do no wrong after you'd been in that. You probably were raised in the community, went off to college, came back, got a husband, and sat down and started teaching school every day, and you became something akin to a direct connection to the Pope. Everything that you did was mm-hmm. wonderful, and you were respected. And parents, I think, at that time had a very different attitude towards public education than many of them do today. So the world has changed. It's changed significantly, and you saw those days. You experienced those days.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I consider myself and others like you to be something of a dinosaur. The world has changed. We don't recognize it on some days, and that change is oftentimes very difficult to process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to go back. I was going to throw in the respect for school people, and these included local people who would donate their time to serve on their local school board, and I wanted to say, you know, we once elected a governor. Your close family friend, Dale Bumpers, of course. Glenn is originally from Charleston, as was Senator Bumpers. But we elected a governor who, at the time, his only previous experience in elected office was the Charleston School Board. And yet, that was good enough for the voters of Arkansas at that point.
Absolutely. And I think it was one of his greatest attributes. He understood the importance of singular issues to not only Arkansans, but to people who lived in Charleston, America. If you can navigate the issues related to adults and their students on a daily basis as it pertains to education, you learn a lot about face-to-face politics, face-to-face conversations. And the one thing about Senator Bumpers is he understood the importance of a public education. Arkansas, as you know, was also one of the first, Charleston, as you know, was one of the first schools to integrate. And his family had a significant role in that as well.
One of the first in the entire South, not just in Arkansas.
Absolutely. Charleston at that time, I think, was a good microcosm for the state of Arkansas and gave him a good background to fall back on.
Mm-hmm. So your journey, growing up again in a family of school people, you grow up in Charleston. You attend college at Hendricks, or as I like to know, Hendricks and Ouachita, my alma mater, of course, the Harvard and Yale of Arkansas, right?
They would certainly have to be in that conversation.
There we go. But you go to Hendricks. Did you know all along that you wanted to be an educator, or is it something that just somewhere along the line in college came to mind that that's what you wanted to do?
Probably not, unlike the experience that you had. I watched people in our community and the respect that they had for the jobs that people like my father were performing. Mm-hmm. My mother was a secretary in one of the buildings. Obviously, my father had a number of very good friends on his staff, and there were some close-knit communities there in the region, mm-hmm. Ozark, Lavaca, County Line, Fort Smith.
Yeah.
There was just a respect that went along with those positions that I think had a significant impact on my decision to follow that direction. It always inspired me to see just the number of simple things and simple people who respected not only the position but the job that the individual was doing, and that's a hard thing to replicate. It's a hard thing to replace if it doesn't exist. So yes, I think I always knew I'd be involved. I certainly had no idea I'd be following the path that I did, but at that time, it was something that was easy to be attracted to.
Yeah. So I have to ask, how does a boy from far west Arkansas, Charleston, end up spending a career in far east Arkansas, the Delta of Arkansas?
Well, it started with a very Yogi Berra's point about there was a fork in the road, and when you come to that fork, you took it. Yes.
Yeah.
I actually finished my degree at the University of Arkansas. I finished it at 28, and they had never awarded a EDD to anyone under the age of 30.
Mm-hmm.
They said, you need to go to work for a couple of years and come back, and then we'll set you on your way. Had the great opportunity to go to work for Benny Gooden at Fort Smith.
Right. One of the legendary superintendent.
One of the great icons of our generation. Did that for a couple, 3 years, and then started deciding it was time for me to branch out and become a principal I was an assistant principal at Northside.
Gotcha,
in,
Northside.
In charge of discipline and attendance.
Oh, wow.
So it was a fairly exciting position, never boring.
You kept those Grizzlies in line.
And we were winning football state championships.
Yeah, you were at the time.
And had basketball state. We had a great run while I was there. Doug McKinney, Joe Fred Young, people like that that you, are, again, are legends in Arkansas sports annals. But essentially, I was offered the high school principal's job in Fayetteville and in West Memphis on the same day.
Mm.
And my wife lived in Northwest Arkansas. My family was there. My professors were there.
Fayetteville and was the one that would seem the obvious choice.
And everyone said, oh, what an honor, what a great situation to be at your age and have that chance. The Fayetteville School District and the West Memphis School District operated on a little different level. There was a little more community input into what was going on in Fayetteville and just some pretty basic old simple logic in West Memphis. And truthfully, I felt like I needed to go see another part of the state of Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And I did have an affinity, I think, built in back to the connections with Charleston and its integration. I had an affinity for working with people who maybe didn't have the same opportunities, the same blessings that everyone else did. I really believed in my heart that students in Fayetteville were going to be fine.
Yeah, you strike me as a man that probably wanted a challenge also.
I wanted to go find out what it was like and what you could do to make a difference. And was the high school principal there for a couple of years, planned to move back to Northwest Arkansas. Then there was a piece of legislation that afforded communities an opportunity to really create a technical college or a community college there. And many of the community leaders came to me and said, look, this can't happen without trying to raise a tax, a property tax, in a community of farmers. You're the only one we know that's maybe crazy enough to do that. If it passes, then you'll have an opportunity. If it fails, you're probably planning to go back to Northwest Arkansas anyway. So we went to work, and God smiled upon us. We passed a 4-mill property tax increase, and a community of farmers who really weren't all that excited about it, but were persuaded by our local newspaper and others that it was a great economic development opportunity. Spent 23 years working on that project.
Yeah. It is, of course, one of the things we both love about Arkansas is it's such a small state. There are really 2 degrees of separation. When you were talking about taking that technical college into a community college, I think back to when I was the young editor of Arkansas Business, and the statewide effort had started to take all of basically the technical colleges in Arkansas, most of them at least, to the junior college level. And that effort, they had hired your fellow Charlestonian, Archie Schaefer. They had given him a cubicle down the street from where we're taping here in the Southwestern Bell Building. You may remember that.
It would have.
And I spent about a half day with him, you know, and did a big story on that effort. You'll probably remember when Archie was in that cubicle over there.
If it was Archie's cubicle, it needed to be of extra large size. But not simply because of his physical build, but Archie's one of the sharpest knives that we're going to ever find in our drawer.
In Arkansas, yeah. Absolutely. Boy, some wonderful people have come out of Charleston. So anyway, you get that done, and suddenly you're running a community college then.
And it was, I think, our first year we had 80 students and really didn't even know how much money we had. The state's funding model had not yet evolved. Lots of long stories about, as you will remember, that transition, that proposed transition for those institutions to become more formerly institutions of higher education, was not well received from the university community, and the university community controlled a lot of Arkansas's politics.
Absolutely, they did.
The Joyce Rotens of the world.
And there were some strong presidents and chancellors at that point too.
And it was an uphill battle, but I do believe it was the right thing to do, and I do believe that Arkansas is much better off today than we were before that evolution. You know, my father was fond of saying that Arkansas is one of the last places that we need to be rationing education.
Amen.
And for many people, going to Hendrix or Ouachita or UCA, depending on where they lived and their family background, was simply not something they could sustain. They might go for a week and run out of food for a hamburger and no gas in the car and have to go back home. So the idea that you placed similar opportunities closer to where the people were has had and will continue to have a significant impact on Arkansas's future.
Yeah, it just so happens as we're taping this, in fact, I will go back to my desk after we tape this and go back to work on one of these columns, but I have been doing a series of columns on the southeast quadrant of the state, southeast Arkansas, and I'm writing a piece now where, as I looked at it, because many people have always, that's kind of been, for lack of a better term, the problem child of Arkansas when it comes to economic development. And it struck me, and I'm writing this, that the two most important institutions in that quadrant are the University of Arkansas at Pine Bluff and the University of Arkansas at Monticello. That most of their students are first generation. We talk about, and this can be Delta-wide, obviously, to your effort, we talk about breaking that cycle of poverty, and I think you'll agree with me that there is no better way, whether it's an associate's degree, a bachelor's degree, an advanced degree, of breaking the cycle of poverty than to get that first generation college graduate, because then that graduate is going to see what it means to him or her and make sure their children have degrees, and you break that cycle. I know of no better way to break that cycle.
There is a modification that is a little better precursor to that, but yes, it's very difficult for any of us to imagine things that they've never seen.
Mm-hmm.
So if you live in a community and no one in your family's ever matriculated.
Ever thought about going to college, yeah.
I know my father was the first person in Billstown, Arkansas, to ever attend college. He hitchhiked back and forth to UCA, and it certainly changed his opinion of what his children would attain.
Yeah.
But
Think of what that Glenn Campbell guy from Billstown could have done had he gone to college. He could have really made something of himself, Glenn. Yeah.
He actually, my grandfather was a Church of Christ deacon.
Oh, okay.
And he warned my aunt, my father's sister, of Glenn's intentions. He said, you have to stay away from them Campbells. All Glenn wants to do is play the guitar. He ain't ever going to amount to nothing. And if you continue to run with him, only bad things can occur.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, he was only married seven times, I think. But at the end of the day, he was not considered to be a good prospect from my grandfather's perspective, nor was he considered to be the best musician in the Campbell family.
In the family, yeah. Glenn's dad, by the way, would buy hunting in the early 1950s when my dad had established a sporting goods store at Arkadelphia, would buy hunting and fishing supplies from him. You know, Arkadelphia was the big city when you were from Billstown. So.
Absolutely. And one of the interesting things I know you've looked at, that this is
I digress, but that again, we're talking about Arkansas as a small state.
Yeah, those phrases that are regionally unique. Well, I used to go down with my grandfather at Billstown, and you know, at home we would say, "Let me take you to." and down there, I said, let me carry you.
Let me carry you to Hope.
Let me carry you to Arkadelphia.
Yeah, exactly.
And I always thought it would have been easier to have ridden in a truck than to be carried
carry
over
you.
There.
Yeah. All right, and I'll get us back on subject. We're talking about breaking the cycle of poverty. Yeah. And you've been dealing with this for decades now. The Delta.
What we're doing in Arkansas today that we started some 25 years ago, not unlike a lot of other innovations, 25 years ago it was heretical. The universities were fighting it. The only places that really were doing it correctly were what was then West Ark, that's now the UA Fort Smith, and then we had instituted some similar programming in concurrent credit to allow high school students to actually take college courses while they're still in high school. What that does is create the first step, the precursor to them understanding that they can be successful, and that it is something that they should not fear.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that going on all over Arkansas. Ken Warden, who is with the Department of Higher Education now, was a big player in what went on at UAFS, and he's doing a fantastic job, I think, of pushing more concurrent credit opportunities into our school districts.
Mm-hmm.
And doing so with a great level of coordination back to higher education, which is the piece that had been missing for decades.
Gotcha. So what, obviously our poverty rates remain high in Arkansas. We remain, after all of these decades and all these great educators we've talked about, we remain one of the poorest states in the country. What are we not doing? What do we need to be doing that we're not doing right now?
First and foremost, I think if you talk to educators across the state, some that have had the investments made appropriately and some that haven't, the answer is pretty much going to be the same. Arkansas's never, even with all of its innovations and all of the money that it's spent and all of the things that we're doing now with the LEARNS Act that you and I have pontificated on ad nauseum, we've never been willing to invest in universal pre-K. When you're dealing with poverty, the straighter line you can paint between that youngster's life and getting them into a classroom where they can learn more social skills, where they have the ability to be assessed and understand their learning styles. The faster you can do that, the better off we all are. And I can tell you in our situation, the number one need in our couple of county region is universal pre-K.
Mm-hmm.
If we can start getting those children in earlier, you're going to see significant advancements. And then the idea that we have to, as controversial as this is, we have to improve our welfare system. Our welfare system is trapping people every day.
Yep.
It is causing behaviors to occur that are in no one's best interest, and it should be linked directly to skill set training and employment.
Absolutely.
And it is, in theory, it is, but when you study how it actually works, a quick example, I did some work in Memphis for Nike and AutoZone. That was one of our charges, go into the hood, get people skill sets so that they can go to work for those kinds of companies.
Mm-hmm.
We had to come up with a different way to give people access to information and started actually giving them skill sets through their cell phones. In a gaming environment, won some national recognition, some big grants for doing that. At the very end of the process, we had a number of people that were appropriately skilled. They had OSHA cards. They had been through all sorts of pre-employment training. There were jobs at that time paying $17, $18 an hour for good companies with upward mobility.
Mm-hmm.
The day they went to work for that company, they lost a myriad of benefits that made it impossible for them to go to work. That couple of months, you know, when you first start with a company and you're waiting on this to kick in and that to kick in.
They had to go home.
Had to go home.
Yeah.
And so I learned then that oftentimes some of our models that appear to be well intended, and they are, aren't designed with the level of detail to produce the results that we really need them to produce.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're paying people just enough money to stay home and be trapped, but not enough money to get out with no infrastructure to put them in a position where they at some point have to go to work, that's a trap. And so there are two bookends. One, we got to get them quicker. Two, we got to make certain they understand that a part of this process is you're going to learn a skill, and we're going to give you a job that lets you take care of yourself and your family and help everybody that you're associated with achieve their God-given potential.
Yeah. I mentioned Southeast Arkansas. You're more in that Northeast quadrant. You know, I have written a lot because it's a great story about Mississippi County, for instance, becoming the leading steel-producing county in America now. I mean, who of us that grew up in Arkansas, people your age, my age, could have ever dreamed that Arkansas would be the heart of American steelmaking? I like to say, take that, Pittsburgh Steelers. And yet, most of those workers are not, as you know, living full-time in Mississippi County. They're coming in for their 4 days home, their 4 days off. They go back to southern Illinois. They go back to Tennessee, western Kentucky, Boot Hill of Missouri. And a lot of that is because they don't want their children in the public schools of Arkansas. Am I right on that?
I think that's certainly part of it. A part of the foundation that was laid for the steel mill evolution and Cliff Chitwood and others, Joe Harris up there, have done a
tremendous
fantastic
work.
Job.
Absolutely, all heroes of mine.
But a lot of that foundation, I think they will tell you, goes back to Arkansas Northeastern Community College,
mm-hmm.
and a consortium that we created with
yep.
several schools in the region, with the idea that the greatest economic development tool that region has is the Mississippi River.
Exactly.
And so we worked on several plans, and several community colleges developed their own specialties. The specialty of steel mill production was obviously the one that was focused on there,
mm-hmm.
In Blytheville and in Osceola. All the infrastructure's there. I mean, it's a perfect storm, with the exception of the fact that housing, public school investments,
mm-hmm.
Infrastructure investments that make the communities more attractive for people to move to, those didn't occur at the same rate.
Right.
So a lot of what's happening now is they're playing catch up. They've got they've caught the tiger. They have it by the tail.
Right.
But now we've got to find ways to make it more attractive. It is
where these folks will move their family
and
pay
people,
taxes
yes,
there
and
have
people
an investment
like
there.
People like Ritter Arnold are taking some of it on right now. It is fixable, but it's not a quick fix.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a shame that you had for this great opportunity that we have. And you can move that down the river now. You have the steel mill and now Google.
And Google coming into Crittenden County.
Absolutely.
Where you are. Absolutely.
So how troubling should it be to us that we have now secured job opportunities that the rest of the state, even Northwest Arkansas, would be envious of,
mm-hmm.
and yet we're not in a position to create opportunities for those workers and that tax money, as you referred to it, to stay in Arkansas.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's one of our biggest challenges. If I'm in charge of economic development in Arkansas, I have to recognize that while what we've done over there is fantastic, and the state's done a great job, that work can't finish.
Mm-mm.
And it needs to address our investments in things like pre-K and public schools and infrastructure that make those communities more attractive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So is there – I'm trying to think of the right words. When it comes to our policymakers here in Little Rock, our legislators, our governor, is there just a lack of will? I guess that's the word I'm looking for, to do the things you really need to do. to take advantage of these opportunities we now have in the Delta?
I think there are a combination of things. One, you have to have lived there and understand the culture to know what the true issues are and how to best fix those. Not everybody that gets elected to be governor has spent much time in eastern Arkansas.
Good point.
I think the other issue is many people in central and northwest Arkansas look at eastern Arkansas through jaded lenses.
I use that term problem child. Yeah. I mean, and I
didn't, that is the crazy part.
I didn't mean that as an insult. I was thinking how those people think.
Yeah, Eastern Arkansas has been the millstone around the neck of our state. I always tell people there are two options for our students. They can either be tax consumers or tax producers.
Exactly.
Arkansas needs to convert more potential tax consumers into tax producers. You do that by changing the way you give them opportunity and access to skill sets that can allow them to sustain themselves. I always felt like Barack Obama made a real critical error because he had the opportunity. You remember the big conversation was on the Clinton health care.
That
got turned into a debacle.
Right.
A debacle. And then we had the conversation about infrastructure nationally and insurance, health insurance.
And health insurance, yep.
Think about what might have happened if a president like Barack Obama said, okay, 6 months from now there's going to be 452 infrastructure projects across the country.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to train people who don't have a skill set, who are on tax consumption roles. We're going to give them a skill set to work in those sites. We're going to provide them health insurance, we're going to provide them a workable wage, and we're going to teach them a skill that gives them unlimited potential. If we had made that choice, not unlike FDR with the some of what we did with the WPA and the CCC, if we had made those decisions then, our country would be a very different place today, and regions like eastern Arkansas would have fallen into that same path. We have to understand that you can't treat every region, every community the same. Some require more help than others. And we're so close to seeing eastern Arkansas just explode.
Mm-hmm.
Why not go over there and make some additional investments in pre-K?
And
things that can that can make up for what we haven't been doing, but take advantage of the great opportunities that we have.
Yeah. Glenn and I have a lot in common in that we both from the western half of the state. You're from the Arkansas River Valley. I'm from southwest Arkansas, but we both have this love for the Delta, and I haven't lived there for years, but, you know, I was one of the presidential appointees to the Delta Regional Authority. I've spent much of my career working on Delta issues.
And you did a fantastic job. That was one of those eras with people like you in that position, Marion Barry, others who really understood the Delta and understood who knew the people that understood it.
Well, I was just going to say, and I know we play that game, if I were the king, but if I were the king, or let's just say if I were the governor, I would love to see a governor run on the idea and sell it to people in central Arkansas, sell it to people in northwest Arkansas. Look, again, like you said, we don't need tax consumers. We need tax producers. So we're going to do an Arkansas version of a Marshall Plan for the Arkansas Delta and bring up this region, because we're still, with everything else, the potential, like you said, is there. But we just need a little extra oomph. We need some government incentives. We need some additional investment. And then everybody benefits if we do that in
Arkansas.
But
then you're not talking about needing to build a $1 billion prison.
Right. Right.
And so, but again, you know how the General Assembly works as well as anyone. People are, term limits has created people into legislators that are issue specific. They have to go back home and report almost daily.
What kind
of pork did I find
today?
Can't
take that statewide viewpoint. Yeah.
You're not dealing in the days of Mike Beebe and Morrill Harriman and Ed Thixton and
right.
and those folks who saw the bigger picture. It is the case that it can be easily proven that these investments, if they were strategic and significant and sustained, would save the state of Arkansas money in the long term. Mm-hmm. And we have everything in place now. 2, 3, 4 years ago, it was always, we don't have the jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got the jobs.
Now we've got
them. And those jobs are going to do what? They're going to bring more jobs. They're going to bring more ancillary employment opportunities. What we're not doing is recognizing that not every child comes from a two-parent home. Not every child comes from a four-car garage. Nobody chooses to be poor. People deep down inside aspire to get beyond that. The educational model that we have and the structure that we're continuing to push now with these letter grades and labeling what's happening in some just absolutely indefensibly inaccurate ways, we're limiting the opportunity to grow Eastern Arkansas and Southern Arkansas.
Yeah.
And it's us. It's like the old Pogo cartoon. We've met the enemy, and it is us.
You're right. We have run out of time for this show, but I want to let you know we're going to get Glenn back in a couple of weeks because there's so much to talk about. And we're going to focus in on where we are now. We're going to talk about the Learns Act. We're going to talk about vouchers, all of that. But thank you. Thank you. This has been fascinating. I'd love to talk Delta issues.
The only problem with talking to you is there's just never enough time.
Exactly. Well, we'll do it again in a couple of weeks. Dr.
Thank
Glenn
you,
Fenner from the Marion School District, our guest, thank you for joining us for another edition of the Southern Fried Podcast, a production of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette.